I'm hosting, right? Hello, hello, yeah. Hello. Welcome to Add This to Your List. This is Fumi Simano, and I'm with two good friends of mine, Tom Chuba and Mark J. Parker. Gentlemen, say hello to everybody.
Yo, yo, yo. Hi, everybody.
We've taken a couple weeks off to relax, relate, and release after Thanksgiving. How was the holiday for you guys?
It was fine. Oh. You know, nothing spectacular.
Just fine? Okay.
I mean, Thanksgiving's not all that exciting to me in the
oh,
end.
Oh, yeah. Really? I really do. I like Thanksgiving.
I do, too. What's not to like, honey? Food. Give it to me. Feed me. Put it in my mouth. I love it.
Yes, the food is great, but the time with the parents and the in-laws for, like, three consecutive nights is
oh,
not
do they a spend yeah. a weekend?
Sorry, family, if you're
they
listening.
They spend a...
They could.
Oh, yeah. I see. Well, damn, son.
The last couple years, it's only been a one-day thing for me with my parents because they come to visit us. So, okay, maybe that's
in
why. Okay, yeah, with you, it's a little different. All right. Yeah. How was yours, Foom? Good?
It was good. It was lovely. Family came up and, you know, it was a lovely Thanksgiving.
Nice. That's nice.
Good.
And Christmas is coming right up, everyone.
Like, in 2 weeks, it's, like, gonna be here.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it. I can't believe 2019 is almost
yeah,
over.
Yeah, man. New decade.
The decade is
Jeez,
almost
don't
over.
Don't even get me started.
All right, we got a good show for you guys today. We're gonna get into our, why can I never, housekeeping and headlines? I don't know. We're gonna get into our housekeeping and headlines. And then we're gonna get into our list. And then we're going to tackle holiday movies, specifically Hallmark. Hey,
Hallmark.
Housekeeping and headline, let's get that going first. Housekeeping. Netflix is keeping the Paris Theater open. Is that a headline or housekeeping?
Yeah.
No, that's housekeeping.
When did we talk about that before?
I talked about the Paris Theater a couple episodes ago.
Oh.
So it's this beautiful, maybe you were, I think you were there.
I just don't remember.
But yeah, so a couple weeks ago, we found out, maybe a month or so ago, we found out that the Paris Theater, beautiful single screen theater that they have done many premieres at in New York City, was closing,
oh, yes,
you know,
yes,
shutting
yes,
down.
Yep.
No one's going. Yep. But we found out just a few days ago, as of this recording, that Netflix has officially basically purchased the theater. And now going forward, Netflix is basically the Paris Netflix Theater. So it's a one screen theater that Netflix will just always show and premiere their original movies there, leading up to its release on Netflix. So
they did The Irishman and Marriage Story
yeah.
there.
So that's like their official. I don't even think it's going to be only awards because, you know, award season is now. It's not all year long.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's going to be all year long, like whatever movies they want to release in a theater. I'm sure it's not going to be every single Netflix movie, but I think that's kind of a cool way to keep a beautiful theater open. I'm not hating Netflix for it. I think some people were like, oh, you know, another corporation buying something. But I mean, they're keeping the doors open and letting some people work there.
Yep.
So I think it's a cool idea.
People just want to hate. I think it's a great idea, too.
Yeah. So that's a fun little update on the Paris Theater. So go see, I guess, Marriage Stories playing there, I think, unless they're changing it to something else soon. I don't know.
I think the Two Popes is going in there because now our Marriage Story
is on yeah.
out on the platform
makes
streaming.
Makes sense.
So.
Yep, makes sense.
And then we've got headlines. Mark, why don't you continue on with the National Board Review?
Sure. So, like I just said, it's award season, y'all. If you didn't know, wake up, open your eyes, because the National Board Review and many others that Tom will also tell us about are announcing their winners and, you know, best of the year kind of thing. So the National Board of Review, I wanted to talk about this because I thought their list was interesting. I still haven't seen a lot of movies, I admit, this year. I have not seen many at all. But they are saying the best film is The Irishman, which I'd love to watch, but I'm a little nervous about that running time, y'all. Best director is Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which Fumi took a nice big nap during. Best actress is Renee Zellweger Yep, that's right. Renee Zellweger, which who Tom raved about earlier this year on this podcast for Judy. Actor goes to Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems. So I'm cool with that. That's interesting. Real quick, other winners: Brad Pitt, supporting actor; Kathy Bates, supporting actress. The Irishman also won adapted screenplay. So those are the big. Parasite, which you guys loved. I haven't seen Parasite yet. That's best foreign language film. No surprise there. And Knives Out, which is cool. That got best ensemble. I still haven't seen that yet. So all the winners sound great. They also list their top films, 10 films besides The Irishman that they think are great. So 1917, Dolomite Is My Name, which Feeny loved.
Yes.
Yeah. Ford versus Ferrari, Jojo Rabbit, which I haven't seen yet, Knives Out, Marriage Story, which we'll talk about as well in this episode, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Richard Jewell, which I didn't know anything about until just a couple weeks ago, and it does look good, Uncut Gems, and Waves. So those are like kind of their best of. Then they do a list of independent films. Check them out. But I also wanted to talk about the National Board of Review because a couple of years ago, they were in the news because their membership is a little murky. So the National Board of Review, when you go to their site, when you learn about them, it sounds amazing. They were established in 1909, but they are basically a select group of film enthusiasts, filmmakers, professionals, and academics of varying ages and backgrounds that watch 250 films throughout the year, right?
So in theory, could we be part of the board?
In theory, that sums us up to a T. However, there's no clear way to join or to figure out how to submit yourself for consideration. Mm-hmm. They tell you all about how to submit your film to qualify for an award consideration, but you cannot figure out anywhere. And I thought this year, when I saw the headline of the winners, I was like, all right, I'm going to email them and see how I can join because I'm just curious. Like, who are these people, these film enthusiasts? And as I was typing their email into my Gmail, I realized I emailed them last year and asked, how do you join this membership? I'm a film enthusiast. And they never responded.
You never got a response.
I got no response.
Shady. Yeah. We
so,
need to tweet
you know,
them.
I don't want to throw shade. I'd love to join y'all, but do you want to make it a little clearer who your members are? There was a headline, I think, back in New York Magazine or one of the New York publications trying to investigate who these people are, and they tried to interview the woman who runs it, and she's being a little shady. So I don't know. Just throwing that out there. I think the list, I'm sure, is great, but who are you, National Board of Review? So
let us know. Come, we'll interview you if you want to clear your name.
Absolutely.
Not saying that you have to clear your name, but you know.
Yeah. So just a little, just a little curious there. That's just my two cents. But all those movies, as we figured, they are now in the official running for all the other stuff. So let the race begin.
And Tom.
Yeah, and so while Mark is on the topic of awards, it is that time of year. We say it every year, but 'tis the season has double meaning for us at Add This to Your List, holidays and awards.
True.
In addition to the National Board of Review releasing their list, the AFI has released their list and nominations. The Hollywood Critics Circle, which is formerly the Los Angeles Critics Circle, the New York Critics Circle, they've all released their list. And then, of course, what's really of interest to us, the Critics' Choice Awards nominations and the Golden Globe nominations have come out.
Mm-hmm. Brand new.
It's just really overwhelming. We're not going to read the whole list for y'all. We know you could go there and find the lists. It may be a chore to do that. But let's just talk, guys. What do you think? I mean, what surprised you? What didn't surprise you? I have to say there's no real major surprises for me on the film front.
Yeah.
On the TV front, maybe a little bit, but let's get into film. Any major surprises or snubs or?
Not for me. I feel like the Globes are not shocking or surprising. I have to say, though, I'm a little disappointed by the Globes. I feel like there is such a wide range of films to choose from, of like limited series to choose from, and I just was a little disappointed by their choices. And there were no women directors nominated, which I was also really shocked by.
I don't know. I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like last year.
I have to say it was refreshing not to see Game of Thrones take so much of the heat. Even though we love This Is Us, it was nice to see that they're giving another show a chance in the drama field and not nominating This Is Us or its actors this year, even though Fumi and I both agree Susan 4 is phenomenal. Mm. On the film front, I got to tell you guys, I was super, super excited that Knives Out is getting the love that it's getting.
Totally. It got some good noms, definitely. For both critics and Golden Globes, a good surprise for me was it's nice to see Beanie Feldstein nominated for Booksmart. That's a fun, deserving.
But then Booksmart's not nominated as the movie itself.
Yeah,
right?
But I'm okay with that. I thought it was good. I did not think
it was amazing. Funny. I mean, it was the same playbook as all the other Seth Rogen movies.
It's funny.
Like, exact same playbook, but it was funny. I got a chuckle.
Yeah. Yeah. But so that was a nice surprise. But yeah, I was mostly surprised. First thing I noticed with Globes, and then it's funny because then it got the most, I think, TV noms for the Critics' Choice, was When They See Us was totally snubbed from Globes.
Right.
Which...
Do you think that's a Felicity Huffman
thing? No, I don't think it has anything to do with her, honestly. Oh, I think it's maybe Ava DuVernay really didn't campaign for the Globes, or maybe they just weren't... The committee, the Hollywood Foreign Press Committee, just wasn't feeling that movie. I don't know.
Right. I also think, honestly, like, because you guys know I loved The Act earlier this year on Hulu. That did luckily get some acting noms for the Globes. It didn't get a limited series or TV movie nom at all, which I was sort of surprised by. So honestly, I feel like there is so much content out there, at least for TV, but even movies, because like Us, I don't think got any Globe noms at all. Like anything
Lupita,
that came out in the first 6 months, except for like Booksmart
Rocket
and maybe...
Man.
Rocket Man, Rocket Man,
and
surprised.
Once Upon a Time.
I feel like that's sort of... Well, Once Upon a Time came out in July.
Oh, okay.
But like anything pre-June, I feel like it's like good for you for breaking through, because everything else was like June 1st and later, you know? So yeah, that's sort of surprising that certain things were... there's just not enough room. And it's funny because Critics' Choice Awards, there's like 7 or 8 nominees in each category.
I know, it's
like,
so many.
I love it, but like...
I know that... I feel like they understand that you have to expand it. Like, there's just so much content today. And, like, look at how many times Netflix was nominated, right?
They had the most Globe noms, I think, this year, right? I think...
Yep, and then The Irishman had the most Critics' Choice noms. Mm. So, again, that's a badge of honor for Netflix. Hey, guys, can we talk about Laura Dern? She wasn't nominated for Big Little Lies. That was kind of, like, gay gasp for me.
Yeah. That was... I mean, that's a big omission because, I mean... Looking back on Big Little Lies season 2 months later, like, she immediately comes to my mind first.
I don't think Big Little Lies is going to get a lot of awards love, you guys. To be completely honest, I feel like season 2, people didn't love it as much. And also that whole thing with the director coming out. I feel like people are just kind of like, just call this one a spade, you know? Like, we had a great first season. Everyone was behind it for the first season, second season. You know, y'all did it, but we're going to... let it go.
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting because the Globes nominated Jennifer Aniston for The Morning Show, but Reese for Big Little Lies, which, according to what you guys have said, is fair because Reese is
No, they're both head for sure, I think, on Morning Show. I'm actually surprised
that she
didn't get nominated for The Morning Show and Jennifer Aniston did, because I think Reese Witherspoon is a better actress on that show.
Yes, you said that.
Well, let's clear it up, because I watched the Globe announcement when it happened, and Reese got nominated for The Morning Show. Some publications, for whatever reason, still have not.
Oh, no shit.
They have not.
Oh, the one I'm looking at says it's for Big Little Lies. That's so funny.
Yeah, she definitely did not get a nom for Big Little Lies. At least that's not what I heard, and we can, you know, people can go to the Facebook page for the Golden Globes. it's for The Morning Show, and some publications got that wrong and have not cleared it up yet.
Oh,
as of this recording.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at Variety.
Yeah, so it's interesting because some sites are saying it correctly and then some are not. So,
and we're, to clarify, we're talking about the Critics' Choice or Globes?
For Globes. Some sites are saying she is nominated for Big Little Lies for Globes, but I had heard... When I heard them announce it was for The Morning Show.
Oh,
so that'll be interesting. She's got she's just so busy that people are getting confused. But yeah, on her IMDb page, she is a nominee for Best Performance by an Actress in a Television Series Drama for The Morning Show.
That makes sense to me 1,000%. Yeah.
But you know what, Foom? I have to say, even though she's great in The Morning Show, I actually, not that one of them is better than the other. I think Jennifer Aniston actually just has more to do.
She does.
Jennifer Aniston, she, watching the show, she like actually stresses me out because when she is pissed at Reese, I'm like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. You know what I mean? So yeah. I'm glad they're both nominated, but I think out of the two, I actually feel like Jennifer's just got more to do overall. Like Reese, a lot of this
I
is kind of like,
agree. Yes.
You know? But, yeah, so.
Nothing for Cats, so that's,
yeah, I mean.
Well, I mean, it did get nominated for Best Original Songs. So.
And not much for Bombshell. It's funny how some big movies that still
only
are coming
Charlize,
out.
Right?
Yeah, only Charlize and Margot Robbie, but no, like, director, picture. I wonder.
And no Nicole, which is odd.
Yeah.
It's so odd that Nicole's being left out, because she's actually, when you watch the Bombshell trailers, she's the one that captivates me, not Margot and not Charlize, because they haven't shown a lot of Megyn Kelly, because I think they're trying to surprise people.
But at least Nicole is getting the noms for Big Little Lies, because I think she got it
right.
Between
Meryl
the
did.
Two.
Meryl continues her streak.
Of course.
Between
being
the two,
the most
Globes
nominated
and Critics'
actress.
Choice, what are you guys more excited about? I, for one, am more excited about Critics' Choice. I think it's like such a breath of fresh air to see such a diversity in the nominations and to seeing all these different types of shows with all these new actors and actresses being nominated. I was really excited when I saw the Critics' Choice Awards, I have to say.
Yeah, I feel like their noms are spread out more. Like, they actually did their research and, like, watch stuff. However, who actually watches the Critics' Choice Awards?
I
don't
I
even
know
what channel
I
are they even
on. Nobody.
Right?
It's like, I'll just catch who wins
like,
on Twitter.
I think it's like TBS or something.
It's usually on the CW, which is also why it's like, what is that again? Oh. But like, it's a shame. Yeah, you're right, Foom, because their noms are a little bit more exciting. I mean, Globes will be great. Apparently, I didn't even know Ricky Gervais is coming back, so that's kind of interesting because I thought he was like banned. But yeah, it's just funny how the smaller award show actually is a little more exciting. So we'll see. Maybe I'll actually watch.
And Foom, I hate to tell you, but J-Lo be getting those nominations for Best Supporting Actress.
Wait,
I think Oscar's a surefire.
You mean Best Actress
not
or
a
Best
not a win, but a nomination.
Oh yeah. Supporting.
No, Best Supporting Actress.
Oh, for Globes. I saw she was nominated for Globes. Was she nominated for Critics' Choice?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it seems like it'll be between her and Laura Dern as frontrunners for Best Supporting Actress. Maybe Margot Robbie, because she got nominations in both big awards shows as well. So,
well,
I don't know. We'll see. But it seems like the big ones are Marriage Story, Irishman, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has really taken a lot of
1917.
Yeah, that's coming in.
Is getting a lot of love.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think there's a clear, I don't think that there's a clear front runner yet. So it should be interesting.
Yeah. And at least we're getting, I kind of like that. Maybe we're now in an age where there's so much content where each award show will have a different crop of people to, you know what I mean? Like it won't be the same five people over and over and over again, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a
it'll
blessing.
It'll be interesting to watch and see how this all plays out. Mm-hmm. All right. That's it for housekeeping and headlines. Y'all want to get into this list?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Tom, take it away.
Okay, two things on my list. One is a movie, and the other is a broadcast interview, which I don't think I've ever put on my list before. So y'all will have to stay tuned.
First.
Because I am going to talk about The Irishman first and foremost.
Mm.
Okay, so I am Italian-American. I am no stranger to mob movies. My family spends Christmas Eve essentially glued to the TV watching The Godfather saga, to which I roll my eyes because I think The Godfather is severely overrated. But yeah,
wow.
We'll not get
I admit I still have never seen any of The Godfather movies.
I really can't with both of you. It's actually shocking. And if you keep telling people this, they're going to never, ever going to allow you to be a critic. Like,
I think maybe
this.
Over the holidays, I'm going to finally watch all three.
I mean, no, you know what, Mark? They're good. They're good movies. I just don't see the need for my family to sit there and watch them every Christmas Eve and quote it to a T. I mean, they're fine. That's it. They're long.
Yeah.
People die. Oh. I mean, what else do I need to tell you? It's essentially The Sopranos just toned down a little bit, okay? But The Irishman, this is a very different mob movie. And I recently saw an article that said that The Irishman is the quote-unquote snowflakeification of the mob movie because
it actually tells
a very sensitive side to a mob story that you often don't see, What it does is it delves heavily into the guilt and the consequences that often arise when you choose a life of crime, right? So, and if you think about it, it kind of makes sense, but it's like, really, when I read this article, I was like, oh, come on, do we have to politicize everything? But our article made a fair point. Irishman. Okay, so it is about this guy named Sheeran. Robert De Niro plays him, and he basically chooses a life of crime very early on in his, you know, middle age years. And it basically shows all of the tough decisions that he has to make, but he makes a lot of money for his family. However, his family keeps him at a distance because they're very aware of what he does and the shady stuff that goes on among his circle of friends. It is 3.5 hours long, and I know that I'm being very vague with the plot. I don't want to give a lot away because there's more to it than that. It is 3.5 hours long. Ooh. Yes, it does not feel that way, okay? And the movie's also been making headlines because Martin Scorsese, the director, uses de-aging technology, where with
how
with
do you
the three...
say his name?
Martin Scorsese?
Is that how you say it?
How would you say it?
Martin Scorsese?
It's more like Sazy, I've always heard, Sazy? Rather than Sazy.
I've actually heard it both ways, but I think he would probably prefer Scorsese.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Because that's the way to say it in Italian.
Have you heard it that way, Mark?
No. I heard that too, and I was just like, okay, so... We're just gonna.
Well, we'll just call him Marty. Like, how about that?
Okay.
So Marty is the director, and he got a lot of attention early on in the making of this film because he uses a de-aging technology where he takes all three male leads, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and Joe Pesci, and makes them look younger at various stages of the film when they go and show flashbacks. The de-aging technology is very good. The acting is very good. The story is good. Guys, I am not a mob movie guy, but I am going to say this is an add this to your list. It is a very good film. I will say the first 45 minutes were really good. The pacing was near perfection. I was totally into it. About 45 minutes in, the character of Jimmy Hoffa, who Al Pacino plays, he comes into the story. And the story kind of slowed down a little bit for me there. Hoffa is a very strong presence. If you know a lot about him, he is a real person. He was a real mobster. He was also a union worker. So that kind of took the story in a different direction for me, and I felt like the movie kind of dragged a little bit, but then the last hour, I have to say, is some of the most intense stuff that I've seen in a very, very long time.
Intense. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fumi, what did you think? I know you saw it.
Yeah, it was okay. I felt like it was 3.5 hours long. Like, at a certain point, I was like, I get it. Like, you can speed this all the way up.
My God. What time did you guys start watching the movie? Do you remember?
God. Like,
we started at 5:30.
I think I started
on Thanksgiving.
Okay, because, yeah, you cannot start that at...
No.
Even 8 o'clock.
No.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But honestly, it didn't feel long for me. And like I said, I don't typically like these kind of movies, but
this is a very Tom movie. I'll say this. The Irishman is a very Tom movie. And while I like all genres of film, I prefer, if I'm going to watch a mob movie, I want a little more action. I want a little more bloodshed. Mm. I want a little more, although there are definitely moments of complete violence and like bloodiness in this movie. I wanted a little more oomph. And it was just like, I like my oomph at least an 8. And there's the oomph in this is like a 4.
It's a sensitive movie, like I said.
I don't know. I have to disagree with your commentary in the article about this. I don't even know what a snowflake of mob movies. I don't even know what that means. For me, I felt like it was very much about this guy's take on Robert De Niro's character and
Sheeran,
Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah, Sheeran and his growing, budding relationship with Hoffa leading to his untimely, I don't know, death or possible death or missing persons. Because to this day, he's never been, like, nobody's ever found his body, right?
No,
like,
well,
in real life. in real life, to this day, no one has ever found Jimmy Hoffa's body. He is very still true. A missing person. He was declared dead, and I think in the 1990s, but he's
very true. But the film is based on a book called "I Heard You Paint Houses," wherein Sheeran himself admitted that he did kill Hoffa.
Right, but people don't necessarily believe Sheeran actually did it.
They don't, but it's crazy. It's crazy that they don't believe him, because forensic psychologists have said that his story matches up everything that they gathered, from what might have happened.
In the book, he also claims that he also murdered another mobster. I won't say who it is, but Tom, you know who I'm talking about. I went back and read about it, and the chain of events from the police are completely different than what Martin Scorsese put in the movie. So I thought it was interesting Martin's take on the film. Now, I do agree that it's a more sensitive, I guess there's more of a topic about friendship and what it really does mean to when do you take a step back and be like, I'm not going to murder this person, essentially, I guess was the takeaway of that film.
See, interesting for me.
Murder everybody, right?
For me, the takeaway was how it affected his daughter. I think Anna Paquin is the message.
Wait,
of that
did
film.
We talk about the complete and utter uselessness of
oh,
Anna
no,
Paquin?
Oh no, I
disagree. Tell me.
Oh not, my
I've
god,
heard, I've heard such. Yeah, tell me, because this is so interesting. Because I've heard she only has
seven six
lines
words
of dialogue,
literally in the entire movie, and the rest she just stares.
She stares so good.
She's very judging and very she knows what her father is. Yeah. She knows what he does, and she's not happy with it. She really wants something to do with him, and she just constantly gives him leering looks when a situation comes up, and she basically knows that he's behind it, which I thought she did a good job, but. Anna Paquin was an Oscar winner at 8 years old, right? To use her character in such a non-essential way, when I feel like they really could have added so much more to her, really thought was a disservice to her.
And now, Tom, you think she was she?
I thought
great.
She was phenomenal.
Interesting. You know, she auditioned.
Yes,
for this,
that's
apparently.
What I
she
heard.
She auditioned.
Yep.
She auditioned, guys. This is crazy. Does Anna Paquin need to audition for this?
I don't know.
Especially if there's only six words? Shit.
I don't know. But anyway, those are my thoughts.
So ultimately, should I watch it?
Oh, definitely. I think you should definitely watch it.
Okay. All right. I'll try to find a whole day.
Somebody tweeted out a good breakup. About
yep. It was perfect.
Oh, yes.
To
yes.
watch.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to treat it like a mini series, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's the Irishman.
He doesn't want you to do that, though.
No, he does not. That is the Irishman. Number two on my list. I want to talk to you guys about a certain interview between the one and only Howard Stern and Ms. Hillary Clinton. Add it to your list. I went through hell trying to figure out how I could put this damn thing on my list, because I wanted to make sure that it's accessible to all you listeners out there. And it is. You can find it on YouTube. It's broken up into six parts because the interview is nearly 2.5 to 3 hours long.
Oh, but shit.
It is phenomenal, guys. And we're not going to get political. I'm not going to get political. It's just Howard Stern shows why he kind of deserves the title that he gives himself, the king of all media. Because he just knows how to get stories out of people. She comes in there and for 2.5 to 3 hours just presents herself as a human being, tells her life story, tells what it was like meeting Bill Clinton in college, is honest about the fact that she had another boyfriend when she first met Bill, talks about how she broke that guy's heart to decide to go and be with Bill, talks about what it was like to be the governor's wife of Arkansas, and how, you know, when Bill asked her to work on a couple of initiatives, people down south were taken aback that a woman who was just supposed to be the governor's wife was trying to, you know, kind of get her way into politics and make some policy changes and kind of build a career in public affairs, and how she was really a trailblazer down south for that. She talks about what it was like to be in the White House, be a first lady, what it's like to still have to have Secret Service follow you around everywhere to this day, take you everywhere. She talks about what it's like going to the movies with Bill, going to the grocery store and having Secret Service people follow her. She talks about her grandchildren. She talks about Keith Richards, guys. She's friends with him. He called her mom up on her mom's like 75th birthday because she's a huge fan. He was able to show that she is an incredible storyteller. She talks about what it's like being in the room on the day that they decided to make the hit on Osama bin Laden. I can go on and on. All I'm going to say is try and find this interview. It's fascinating. It's captivating. Howard Stern ran it on his SiriusXM channel literally all week long last week. The interview happened on Monday, and I think you were able to find it all week long. The first day I heard it was Tuesday on my way into work, and I literally did not want to get out of the car because it was that damn good.
Nice.
And there was still like 2 hours to go, and I knew that. So I can't say enough about it. She gets emotional. She owns up to some mistakes that she might have made while campaigning to be president. It's phenomenal. It's the best thing I've heard all year long. I'm not kidding when I say that. As far as interviews go, I just highly recommend.
And you got emotional.
What?
You got emotional.
I got emotional.
Right, Tom?
I did. Yeah.
You told us? Yeah.
I did. I totally did. Wow. I just this is what an interview is supposed to be like. And I feel like that art is really getting lost nowadays, right? Because everything's got to be quick sound bites and everybody wants to put something on social. And I feel like a lot of times interviews nowadays, the questions are often vapid and they just don't dig deep. Well, he gets her to dig deep, and it's just fascinating to hear someone speak about. I mean, she's lived a great life. Whether or not she won the presidency, she's had a great life. And she's a great public figure, and I think it's worth hearing her story. Add it to your list.
Cool. Wow. We should post that, Tom, maybe we can post the link on Facebook and Twitter for our followers.
Yeah, and then maybe Hillary will retweet us.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. All right. Mark, what do you got?
Okay, y'all, I have two new shows on my list this week, and I love them both quite a lot. I am telling you to add to your list the shows Servant and Living With Yourself.
Oh, you love Servant?
Ooh, Servant!
Uh-huh, yes. Have you guys watched either of those
yet? No, we don't have
Servant
Apple TV.
Oh, that's right. Well, Tom, Servant, the first couple episodes
are
of
free.
All... Apple shows are free. So even if you just watch on your laptop
good to know.
Figure out. Yeah. Servant, the first three, I believe, are free. It's a half an hour show. I'll start with Servant. Both are half an hour shows. Servant.
Oh,
and
I did not
yourself.
Know that.
But Servant. Yeah. Servant is one of the brand new Apple TV shows. It just premiered on Thanksgiving. So it is kind of the second tier of shows, much like when Fumi told us about Octavia in Truth Be Told. That was kind of the second tier. That's now out for everyone. So is this. Servant is created and written by, I'm going to butcher his name, I'm sorry, Tony Bazgallop, who also produces along with M. Night Shyamalan. And so if you remember, in the beginning of this year, 2019.
I thought you were talking about M. Night Shyamalan, and I was like,
oh, no. Oh, yeah, no, I won't butcher that name. It's a name we'll all remember. But so if you remember earlier this year, I butchered M. Night Shyamalan's Glass movie. I absolutely hated it and thought it was totally disappointing. Well, everyone, M. Night Shyamalan has redeemed himself because Servant is effing
good. Oh, my God,
he's
making me
is
so
it scary?
Excited.
It is. I don't want to say it's scary, but it is creepy. It is creepy, creepy, creepy. I am a fan. Now, keep in mind, I say M. Night Shyamalan is redeeming himself. He's one of the executive producers. In TV talk, that means he literally could have just given money. He could have literally just given his name to it.
Oh, I thought
know,
he had
right?
much more involvement. I thought he was, like, directing them all.
Oh, he did direct the first episode.
Didn't write it?
I watched the first two. He did not write it. No, it's written by Tony Bazgallop. Yeah, so on all the posters and everything, M. Night Shyamalan, he's one of the producers. And no shade, he might be very hands-on, but he did not create this story. It is set in Philly. M. Night Shyamalan does have a little cameo right away in the first episode, so you know how he loves that. But let me tell you a little bit about the show. So it stars one of the greatest actresses of our time who doesn't work enough, and she is fantastic in the show. Lauren yes, Ambrose, preach. You know her from mm-hmm. 6 Feet Under. She was breathtaking in 6 Feet Under. She was even good in Can't Hardly Wait 20 years ago. So Lauren Ambrose plays Dorothy, who's a local Philly TV news reporter. So she works for the local news. She works long days. And her husband is played by the very likable Toby Kebble. He plays Sean, who's a stay-at-home chef. So he's always working with food and he stays at home and he kind of like delivers it to, you know, the Richies of Philadelphia. So they have this baby, and I'm putting baby in quotes. Mm. And they hire a young 18-year-old mysterious nanny named Leanne, played by a great creepy actress, Nell Tiger Free. And so Leanne is their live-in nanny in this beautiful brownstone they have in Philly. And Leanne's a little odd. First episode, guys, I mean, the performances are just so good. There's a lot of looking right into the camera and a lot of pauses and silence. But so something's up with Leanne. Something's up with the family, because as you see in the commercials and the trailers, they don't really have a baby. It's a doll. It's a very baby-like, a very lifelike doll, because you find out in the first few minutes that they had a loss in the family, and their baby that was born only made it a few weeks. And so that really shattered this couple, right? And so in comes Leanne, this nanny to take care of this doll, and every day when Dorothy leaves to go to work, Sean is at home and he's telling the nanny, he's like, you can just put the doll down. She's not home. Like, it's just you and me. We don't have to play this charade. But Leanne treats the doll like a real baby and things get so weird. It's so good, guys. I love it.
It sounds a lot this like The Boy.
The Boy. Oh, that's interesting, Tom. I didn't think about that, but I like The Boy. The Boy was surprisingly pretty good. Yeah, it's kind of like The Boy, only the big difference is the nanny was totally freaked out. In this one, the nanny's doing some weird shit. So I'm just going to leave it there. And so we are basically seeing things mostly actually from Sean, the husband's point of view, because he's starting to feel like, am I going crazy or is everyone around me crazy?
Interesting.
That's all I'll say there.
I did.
Yeah. Check
I did
it out,
watch
guys.
The first like 15 minutes and then I fell asleep. Not because it was boring, but just because I was exhausted. Mm.
Right. Yeah. And it's a little, I don't want to say it's slow, but it's a little bit more quiet and calm. So I could see, yeah if you're not totally awake, you know,
and
it's good.
I got to the point right before I like my eyes shut when I thought the servant was starting to feed or change the baby's diaper, but she seemed to like treat it like an actual baby. So that part was really confusing, but I have to go back and watch to find out like what that all unfolds.
Just go back. Absolutely. Go back. Like I said, it's each episode's half an hour-ish, like 32 minutes. Go back, because the more and more she treats this doll as a real thing, it gets creepy. Things take a weird turn. It also stars Rupert Grint. Is that his name from Harry Potter? Rupert Grint, the redhead. He played, oh my gosh.
Ron.
He played Ron. I have to say, he is miscast. He is the only thing about it that, definitely not bad, but he is miscast. He's not as good as everyone else, and the character should be older. It's weird. So that's a kind of weird fourth character who pops in every now and then, but check it out, guys. I'm a big fan. I can't wait to keep watching. It's creepy. So if you're in the mood for some weird, creepy family stuff, go for it. That's Servant on Apple TV Plus. And then my second show, I am equally loving. It came out in October, a couple months ago. About 2 months ago right now, Paul Rudd stars in the show Living With Yourself on Netflix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, and I wanted to check, this already was on my radar, but as we were saying, awards season and all that, I was getting a lot of screeners and a lot of For Your Consideration stuff. I was like, oh, I got to check out Paul Rudd in the show. He's fantastic. The show is fantastic, guys. Living With Yourself is it's a dramedy. It's mostly a comedy. There's a lot of great comedy here, a lot of really awkward comedy. I have a feeling the series is created by Timothy Greenberg. I don't know much about him, but the whole show gives me a very like British Euro vibe. Everything from the music to just the really dry humor. It also stars, along with Paul Rudd, stars Aisling Bea. I didn't know her. She is an Irish great comedic actress. She is his wife. So basically, a little story about this. I'll give you the plot. So Living With Yourself is all about cloning. And no, it is not like Orphan Black. This is the opposite of Orphan Black, baby. If you're a fan of that, you can totally watch this, and it's a whole different story. So we open. It's a half an hour show as well. I think it's maybe 8 episodes, so you can breeze right through it. And so Paul Rudd plays Miles, who he and his wife, Kate, are, we open on them and they are not doing great. There's not a lot of love there. They're in the suburbs of New York City. It actually takes place in Westchester, but they keep showing them driving across a bridge to New Jersey. And I'm like, that's not Westchester, but whatever, movie magic. but so they are not really happy with each other, with their lives. They're both very busy working people. They would like to have, they wish by now they had a baby. And they, Miles just doesn't really care about himself. He looks kind of crappy. So his coworker one day tells him, oh my gosh, like, I went to this spa and it's amazing. You have to go there. I feel amazing. I'm having these great ideas at work. So Miles goes and things get really wacky and weird. And now there's 2 Miles out there in the world. So I don't want to tell you much more. Each episode takes me on a great ride. I'm telling you, laugh out loud, funny. There's some good drama between them. And you see what's really cool is, much like The Affair, which Tom and I love, although I'm still way behind, you see different perspectives.
Oh, okay. I love
so
that
you
tactic.
You see her perspective. You see Miles' perspective. You see the clone's perspective. So You'll learn why there's 2 of him in the world. You'll learn all this stuff. I'm not going to spoil a thing. Check it out. It is a lot of
fun.
Does
Paul get
naked?
And
I hope it does. You know, I don't think naked, but you definitely see, you know, you see a nice amount. So, yeah, Tom, go for it.
I love him.
I know. He's great. He's so likable. He's great. He looks great. And what's really cool is the hair and makeup department. I mean, it's obviously Paul Rudd playing 2 roles, right? But he looks different. Just very subtly, they made him look like, you know, like, oh, that's the original and that's the clone. So check it out. It's a lot of fun. I'm always, every episode ends perfectly. Perfect writing. So that is Living With Yourself on Netflix.
Awesome. I love it. All right, I'll go next. Mm-hmm. So the first thing on my list is Bikram. It is a documentary called Bikram Yogi Guru Predator. It's on Netflix.
Yes.
It is a documentary from director Eva Orner. And it basically explores how Bikram became the yogi connoisseur that he is today. But also exploring a little known fact that he has been alleged to have been a sexual assaulter and a rapist.
Ooh.
Freaky. I didn't know about this at all, actually, this true story.
It's on Netflix. It is definitely an add to your list. You guys know that I love a good documentary.
Yeah, you haven't talked about one in a while.
I know. It has been a minute.
How long is it?
It's about an hour and maybe 15, 20 minutes. It's a good running time, and it totally goes by.
You can handle that,
absolutely, Tom. Absolutely. Totally can. So it's really fascinating.
Tom can handle a 4-hour mob movie.
But not
but,
an
ooh,
hour
a documentary that's over
know,
an hour?
So crazy.
Ooh.
So it's really fascinating to watch. So yeah, so Bikram came to the United States in the 80s. He says, according to him, he came to the United States to cure Nixon of an ailment. Mm. And then Nixon gave him a green card, which allowed him to stay in the United States. And from there, he worked with celebrity and people in Hollywood to become this massive person who we all know today. He basically says he invented hot yoga, which, if you guys all know what Bikram yoga is, it's essentially being in a room. I think it's like 110 degrees. It's a hot room. You're sweating, but it's supposed to warm up the muscles to help you move through 26 postures. And so Bikram invented like 26 postures that you just move through seamlessly. And so when he started this, it became, everybody wanted to do it. Like everybody and their mother thought this is the best thing ever. He says that he started yoga because he used to be a bodybuilder and he had an accident in India and it crushed every single bone in his body and yoga was the only thing that cured him.
Okay.
So he brings these stories to the United States and creates Bikram Yoga. And essentially what the documentary truly follows is these classes to become a Bikram Yoga certified teacher, you have to take classes through Bikram himself. And you had to pay an exorbitant amount of money. And a lot of times he would, not a lot of times, every single time, he would teach the class in a tiny little black Speedo with nothing else on.
Yeah. I saw that in the trailer. I was like, okay.
And he would get, you know, in people's business. Because it's like, you guys, I don't know if you guys have ever done yoga before, but you're in really interesting postures. And sometimes you need someone to, like, adjust you to get better and deeper stretching. And so the documentary follows three women who basically say that through their courses and through their teachings of wanting to become a certified yoga instructor, Bikram used them to assault, and one or two women actually were claimed full-blown rape. So it's a fascinating documentary, fascinating about who he is, what he's done, the stories he told to come to the United States, whether or not they're true or not, is kind of left up to the audience and the viewer, even as the documentary ends. And also to find out that Bikram is still around and teaching to this day.
Oh, is he?
But it's not necessarily what you would think or where you would think he's doing it. So I will leave that up to you to find out after you watch the documentary. But I loved it. I thought it was such an interesting piece of knowledge to find out, especially because I myself love hot yoga. I think it's I love it. I think it's incredible. I love the way I feel after. I feel a sense of calmness throughout my whole body. I have more patience with people. I just feel like I can move better. I always get a great night's sleep after. I just love what it does to my brain.
What degree? Like,
I think it's 110.
Do you remember?
It's like 105 to 110. Yeah, it gets pretty hot. But it feels amazing. It really, really does. So that is Bikram. You guys gotta check it out. It's on Netflix. I highly, 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 highly suggest it. And so the next thing on my list is Marriage Story.
Yeah.
We all watched this, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all have.
I'm surprised, Tom, you didn't take it. Okay, so I'll say this first and foremost. It's an added to your list. I loved the movie. I thought it was fantastic. I don't know if it's because I'm a child of divorce and it really resonated with me in a certain way. But I think that it is a fantastic film. So it stars Scarlett Johansson, Adam Driver, as Tom mentioned earlier. These two are definitely in the Oscar conversation. They play a couple who, Charlie Barber and Nicole, who have a successful marriage and run a successful theater company in New York City. And the movie starts off with beautifully with just them talking about what they love about one another. And as you progress and after they each share their thoughts, you realize, oh, this is a couple who's at the end of their marriage. And you know, Charlie kind of assumes that the marriage is going to be completely amicable and they're both on the same page about what they both want and where the family's going to live, and he's going to go do his thing and she's going to do hers. And Nicole's not feeling that. She's on a totally other different page. But they, you can see that their marriage breaks down because of a lack of communication. There are certain little things that Charlie says to Nicole where instead of her just sharing about the fact that it annoys her, she, like, laughs. Like, I thought, for me, a great scene to encompass the collapse of their marriage is when he comes to visit her in L.A. and he's dropping off their son. And he's like, did you cut your hair? I just like it longer. And she's laughs.
And she's, bitch, it ain't your place to like it longer
it's
anymore.
Like, that is so ridiculous. And I thought it was such an interesting scene because she basically, in her mind, I think in that moment, it almost validated her feelings and everything that she was going through
and her decision.
Because it was just kind of like, you were so oblivious to your own selfishness that you would think that I would give two craps or two shits about your opinion on my hair. We're going through a divorce. So little things like that. And I think subconsciously also, something that he never really took her seriously in their marriage is his lack of, like, wanting to find a lawyer. It was almost so, well, we decided this is what we're going to do, so why would I take an extra step to, like, go above and beyond. You're just going to do everything that I say anyway. So I thought that the movie was really, really good. I thought that their interactions together were good, both the good and the bad. They have a full blown out fight, you know, in the movie.
That scene is fantastic.
That was really great.
Did you guys cry at all?
I didn't, which is really surprising.
Oh, I did a little bit at the end.
Well, I guess I did shed a tear or two once the credits started to roll, and I really thought about it with the little boy.
He annoyed the shit out of me. He ruined the movie for
me.
I think he was meant to be annoying. I mean, this, you know, I liked how stressful the whole movie was, especially because we're mostly seeing it from Adam Driver's character's point of view, which the movie is inspired by the real director's real divorce from Jennifer Jason Leigh, which is interesting. So, you know, I was so stressed and felt bad for Adam's character. I felt bad for both, of course, but like, oh my God, the back and forth and the lawyers and the kid and like,
can we talk about one thing, though? And just be honest with me. Do you guys understand why Laura Dern is getting such praise? I don't feel the role is meaty enough.
Oh, I think it's meaty enough. And I think she does deserve the praise because even though she's giving us a lot of Renata from Big Little Lies, she's giving us quite a lot. So, you know, that's kind of like, ooh, I've sort of seen this before, but I think she deserves the praise because even though every now and then it's slight overacting, which I thought all of them, do you guys agree with me? All of them kind of overacted in like one scene here or there, and it felt very like theatrical, and I wasn't sure if that was the
point of the movie.
That, like, sometimes it felt very like, we're going to now sing a song and be in a musical, and like the music every now and then, like, just felt like, are they going to start, like, dancing? And is this La La Land? You know? But going back to Laura Dern, I think she does deserve the praise because she is so different from them. She is so, like, this is a business. This is L.A. And, like, she, every mannerism is so different from Scarlett's character and Adam's character that it's, like, there's them figuring this out. And then there's all these voices that won't shut up. You know,
I thought I agree with you, Mark. I get what you're saying, because I thought that scene with them and with the lawyers, with Alan Ida, Laura Dern, Adam and Scarlett, that was a fantastic scene. The way that Alan and Laura would switch between being lawyers and then just being like, LA is great. Want some coffee? Who wants lunch? Like, it was just fantastic.
And then same with the scene with Ray Liotta is good. You forget that he's really good, actually. Absolutely. He just says stuff, and the actors are great, and her mom and Merritt Weaver as her sister. I didn't realize a lot of these people were in this movie. It's a great cast.
Agreed. I definitely think that everyone should add it. And I get that the praise that they're getting for Oscars, and I do think they'll probably be one of the more awarded films of the season, for sure.
I think Adam Driver is definitely, like, up there. Like, both Scarlett too, but Adam, it's like him versus, I don't know, Joaquin and Robert De Niro, maybe? I don't know, right? But so, Tom, you didn't love it.
I didn't love it, no. I didn't like either of those characters, so it kept me at a distance, and I couldn't feel for them. And the kid annoyed me a lot, and I wasn't sure if he was supposed to. I should, you know, preface it by saying I'm not a children person at all. So, you know, maybe already that I was at a disadvantage. I do love Laura Dern, and I do think she was very good in the film. I'm surprised that she's getting the praise for this. And again, haven't seen Little Women yet, but knowing that it's Greta Gerwig, knowing the cast, I'm surprised, and knowing the meat of the role that she plays in Little Women, I'm surprised that all of her praise has been for Marriage Story versus Little Women. That's all.
It might switch. It might switch. Yeah, because maybe Marriage Story has just been screening longer than Little Women. And it's interesting because Greta Gerwig is with Noah Baumbach, the director of Marriage Story. So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right.
I don't want to put this out there on the record, but Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach started dating as he was divorcing Jennifer Jason Leigh. So I don't know.
I didn't know that.
Just putting that out there. You know, that's just speculation. But yeah, I really liked it. It was sad. Oh, so sad, but also so hilarious.
Yeah, it was a good line funny. For both. Oh my absolutely. God. Well, we had all ads today, you guys. We really did. We had Living With Yourself.
We got good stuff.
Servant, The Irishman, Hillary Clinton's interview with Howard Stern, Bikram, and Marriage Story. All ads. So we liked everything we watched this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Add it up, people. Go see them.
Or all listen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to get into the Christmas spirit.
Oh, Lordy.
And we're going to talk about our favorite time of year, Hallmark movie time, where we get a plethora, an exorbitant amount of holiday love stories. It used to be Hallmark owned this season like its little bitch. And now Lifetime and other networks have creeped in. It's like, hey, we want some of that action too.
Netflix, too. Netflix has been pumping out the Christmas movies.
And as I told you guys.
Fumi's watched every one of them.
I think BET's missing a chance to, dominate the black market with Christmas movies.
Well, apparently BET's got some movies this holiday.
At that. So, hire me. Hire us.
It is going across the board. But we're going to talk about Hallmark because they really did, exactly. They are the OG of the franchises of Hallmark
movies. Love them or hate them. They're
the original ones.
And that article you sent us, Foom, if I remember correctly, 30% of their budget is all these Christmas movies.
Yeah, not a surprise.
I think that's what it said. Yeah,
I mean, they do 24 of them. So.
They cake it in every holiday year. I think they get some exorbitant amount of viewers. People love these films. You know, for a certain point, there's nothing else on TV. So, I mean, I know in my house, Hallmark is going 24/7, baby.
I have to say, I don't know how you handle it. I don't.
I love it. I can just do one Hallmark movie after another, and now I can switch between Hallmark and Lifetime. Yeah, give it to me. All right, so we're gonna talk about our Hallmark movies. We each watched one.
Mm-hmm. One brand new one
for
right?
this new season. And Mark, I'm going to have you go first. What was your movie of pick and choice?
Okay, so I'll tell you a little bit about A Christmas Love Story. Literally, guys, the most generic title I think any Hallmark movie. A Christmas Love Story.
I'm like, no one's chosen that title already in all these years that you've done that.
Right? Wouldn't you think that'd be the first movie? That would be the first one. Now, to be fair, originally the title was The Christmas Song, but as I was doing some digging and learning why they changed the title, there already was a Hallmark movie this year called Our Christmas Song. So they just said, all right, well, quick, change it to A Christmas Love Story. Everyone will love it. So that one starred, that just premiered this last weekend, and it was on my radar because it actually, I think, has some pretty solid leading talent with Kristen Chenoweth and Scott Wolfe, who, as you guys might remember, I just was watching him in Nancy Drew, and he's making a little comeback right now on our TVs. So very likable leads. I do have to say I was happily surprised that the cast consists of quite a good amount of people of color, which I don't know what I was expecting, but it's, you know, there were at least, off the top of my head, like at least two solid supporting black actors, and then a bunch of featured actors, because the story is Kristen Chenoweth is a Broadway actress, turned choir teacher. And so she lives in New York City and she teaches a youth choir of like high school students, all different races and genders and everything. So you get some good diversity there. And basically, let me try to remember the story. I started drinking like 6 minutes in. It was just, I just needed something. I was like, give me something right away. But so her star solo boy is sick, and in comes this teenager who's helping her for the day. He's like the Hallmark version of Zac Efron. They literally look like they could be brothers. He just so happens to have a great singing voice. Oh my God, you have to be in my holiday Christmas show. And so he joins, and then little does she find out, the cute guy that she's riding this Uber with is his dad, and his dad does not want him in the choir. He wants him interning at some finance thing, blah, blah, blah. That's a little sister act, too.
Yeah.
If you remember that, where Lauryn Hill's mom was like, I do not want you singing in the choir. Right? So, of course, literally, I don't even know why I'm saying this. You can all put two and two together, but opposites sort of attract, and it's not like they hate each other, but they're just like, oh, this is weird, tense. Okay, I guess I won't have you sing in my choir because your dad doesn't like it. But they slowly start to chat a little more. She really needs this boy in her choir, and the love fest begins, and there's lots of great singing, and there you go. That is A Christmas Love Story.
So would you say it's an Wait, so they drinking. Get
together? Wait, what'd you
they
say,
They get Fo? Together?
I'm not going to tell you, but I think we all know what happens. You know, there's a formula. So, Tom, your question, would I add it to your list? I mean, sure. Just keep it flowing. Keep the drinks coming, you know.
Don't do Kristen that. Of course you're going to add it to your list.
No, yeah. She's very likable. Even if you don't even like her, she's super cute. And her voice, and obviously she's got a great singing voice. There's lots of good music. You know, it's fun. And there is a little twist that I did not see coming. So, yeah, I feel like this was one of the better movies from the little bit I've seen. So, yeah, there just were some cheesy, like, his boss or his best friend at work, who is the director of the movie, Eric Close, I think his name is. He's an actor as well. Said some really cheesy lines like, oh, you missed a spot. Or I don't know. Someone was saying, like, you missed a spot in the office decorations. And I was like, oh, my God, get me the vodka. But, yeah, so that's A Christmas Love Story. Sure. Add it to your list. It's a good
time. Tom. What'd you watch?
I picked Christmas in Rome, and it stars the woman who has become kind of the Hallmark Christmas queen, Lacey Chabert.
Totally.
I think she does three movies a year on Hallmark.
I just was reading. She and Candace Cameron Bure, they are tied at eight movies each. Eight Hallmark movies each,
So, I picked the one that stars Lacey Chabert, unbeknownst to me. I picked it because of the title and because I'm Italian and because, incidentally, I was in Rome this summer, so all of that stuff was fresh in my mind. It is about this woman. It is about this woman, Angela. I'm sorry, Fum, I can't hear you.
I said we knew that's why you picked it.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So, Lacey Chabert plays Angela. She lives in Rome. She's an American who's been living in Rome for quite some time, working as a tour guide. She does Roman history tours. And she happens to bump into this gentleman, Oliver, one day, who is on a business trip in Rome. He's trying to acquire a Italian ceramics company for his company. He works in mergers and acquisitions. So he bumps into her and he says, oh, excuse me, can you help me find this hotel? She's like, you know what? No better way but then to show you. And she's like, what are you doing in Rome? It's, you know, 5 days before Christmas. And he's like, oh, you know, Americans, you got to work. And I'll make it home on Christmas Eve as long as there's no snowstorm, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, okay. So she brings him to his hotel and she's like, look, you may want to realize that things are done a little differently in Italy, right? The work culture is not the same as in America, especially not at Christmas time. Let me give you some pointers. And he's like, all right, I can hire you as my personal tour guide for the next few days, and you can help me close this deal. You can imagine what happens over those next few days as they stroll the streets and go to the Colosseum all lit up with Christmas trees, and they go see nativity scenes and all this stuff. I won't give anything away. Do they not fall in love? I don't know. You guys will have to check it out.
Oh, God.
But
let me guess.
I'm going to tell you that I did not need a drink at all to get through this movie. It was pretty good. And I'm going to say add it to your list.
Okay. Now, Tom, did they really shoot in Italy?
I would imagine so. There were some things that they did that would be really hard to do in front of a blue screen or green screen.
Wow. Okay. Cool. That's impressive. Yeah. All right. Wow.
All right. Well, mine is, first of all, I'm going to say it's not as your list. I mean, you'd be silly at this point to assume that I wouldn't. My Christmas movie that I picked, Christmas Wishes and Mistletoe Kisses.
Oh, my. When I
do have
this,
to say, Fum.
Like, oh, my God. When I saw the title.
I'm so happy you chose this because, I mean, my movie maybe had the worst title. Yours wins title. I mean, that is genius.
Is it about elementary school children? Because it sure sounds like it.
Elementary school children, no. So my movie is about a young woman named Abby who's a single mom.
Oh, Hallmark.
I know, right?
Aww.
But she's also an interior designer, and she gets hired to decorate the mansion of this single businessman. And, you know, at first when they meet each other, they just don't necessarily see eye to eye, but they have to work through their differences so that she can get her job done and he can have a beautiful home decorated for Christmas.
Of course.
And as they work together to work through their differences, as 'tis the season, they fall in love and
all is happy ever after.
So is that the only conflict in the movie, is that she has to decorate his mansion and they don't have the same taste?
But you know what, though? This movie I actually really enjoyed. So it was based off of a book called The Same Thing, Christmas Wishes and This Is All You Said. It was,
there's
yeah,
a
it
book?
Was, the author is Jenny Hale. It's a novel, and I guess it's one of those, like, romance, like, holiday movie books or whatever. So pretty much the same premise. So they just took that premise from a book and created this Hallmark movie. But I loved it. This is one of the better ones, I have to say. It's well acted. It's not
now,
super
this
cheesy.
Is...
It's fun.
Yeah. Anyone we know, Foom, any familiar faces?
You might
or not
know
really?
The man, the guy, Nick, his character. His name is Matthew Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, I he's love cool. him.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. That's good. Okay.
And the woman who plays Abby, who's the lead, her name is Jill Wagner. I wasn't as familiar with her.
Mm. Oh.
But
okay.
Other people might be.
This is giving me like it's giving me like a slight Beauty and the Beast vibe. Like, coming in and, like, is he a grouch or not really?
Well, he's busy. He's, you know, he's just got other things he's got to worry about. He can't be in the Christmas spirit because he has a business to run.
Gotcha.
It's one of those storylines. Huh. But I loved it. I thought it was so much fun. I thought it was super cute. Like I said, it was one of my favorite ones. And it's it was early on in the Hallmark schedule of Christmas films.
Okay. Yeah, they did start pre-Halloween.
Yeah, they do. They start pre-Halloween, go all through November, all through Christmas. And then after Christmas, you get a week of New Year's.
Oh, wow. Oh, New Year's movies. Oh, I could be into that. And I saw this year they finally are doing two brand new like Jewish movies, like Hanukkah movies.
It's like
so wow,
the menorah and the mistletoe or something like that. I don't know what it's called, but it's something like that.
That's cute, the menorah and the mistletoe. I'm a write one for Hallmark because
guys. Yes. Let's talk about that. You can write for like Lifetime take spec scripts if you've got like a good Lifetime storyline.
Pitch it, Foom. Menorah and mistletoes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But,
You can bet. I'm sure you can write something in a week and they'll be like, sure.
Oh, my gosh. But I have to give a shout out to a Lifetime because I've actually watched a lot of Lifetime movies, too. And I got to tell you, Christmas a la mode, one of my faves. One of my faves, people.
No, that's another good title. Wow. No, what do you think, Foom? Are Lifetime movies better than Hallmark or equal?
They're pretty. When they first started doing Christmas movies, Lifetime, they were better because they were a little bit more edgy.
They're probably sexier, right?
A little bit, but I think Lifetime. Yeah. There's something to be said about the fun and the humor of these Hallmark storylines and like Christmas storylines all across the board. Even Netflix does it now. It's like you've got two people from the big city or one person from the big city, and then they go to a small town, they meet the love of their life, they get into a fight, they make up, and then they get married or whatever.
Right.
There's one kiss throughout the entire film. There can't be anything more than that. And
it's so interesting that they never want to push it to like even like a shirtless scene or something. Like I feel like that is rare on Hallmark. Like they just want to do a hug and a long like peck, and then they're like,
the one with Vanessa Hutchinson, he does go shirtless, so Netflix is pushing it a little.
Yeah, Netflix is definitely, I'd say, out of all of them. Because I also want to see the Let It Snow movie.
Awful.
Have you seen that film
Jeff
on Netflix?
And I watched it.
Oh, I tried to watch it. I didn't like it.
Oh, guys.
I watched it because there was a lesbian story, but then I was like,
Oh, of course Tom was like, ooh.
But get ready, because the Christmas Prince baby is coming, so you know that's going to be on my list.
Everyone stay tuned for next week or whenever it comes out. I saw the trailer and I was like, at Foomy, here you go.
You know I already had it saved, boo. I already had it saved. I'm ready. All right, well, that is our show for today. We are in the Christmas spirit, so hopefully y'all are too.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
Go see a Hallmark movie and let us know how many drinks you had during it.
Make it a drinking game, honestly, you know?
Oh, seriously. I mean, that's the best thing to do.
Well, we'll be back we are winding it down. So we're going to come back with our best of 2019. I can't wait for this one. Uh-huh.
gonna be exciting. Yep.
Best of the year.
All right, guys. Have a great night. We'll talk to y'all later. Thank you to Greg, Allie, and Jay for contributing to the podcast. You can follow us on social media. Leave us a review, people. Mm-hmm. Let us know your Hallmark movies. Let us know what you love to do for Christmas.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Yeah, because there are many more.
Let us know what Oscar movies you're watching and talking about. We want to hear from you.
Yeah.
And other than that, we'll talk to you later.
Toodles.
All right, bye. Peace out. Peace on Earth.
Peace on Earth.